Hi, Cliff Goldstein here. Welcome to the show. What I want to do today is pull a few thoughts from some past shows, flush them out a little more, and try to prove a point. The point? Well, listen, it's quite simple. I want to show you that if God doesn't exist, then Homer's mythic hero Odysseus, you know, the Odysseus whose men were turned into pigs by the enchantress Circe, the Odysseus who visited the underworld of the dead, the Odysseus who stuffed the ears of his men with wax while he was tied to the mast of a ship so he could hear the sirens sing and not be led to his doom. Yes, this Odysseus, this mythic Odysseus, I want to argue that he is more real than you are, or at least you are no more real than he is. That is, of course, if God doesn't exist. And so if you don't believe that this fictional character is more real than you are, then you ought to believe in God. And that's going to be my point. So listen carefully. I want to begin with a quote from a German Jewish philosopher named Max Horkheimer. Horkheimer died in 1973. He was one of the founders of what's been called the Frankfurt School. It's a group of left-leaning social and critical philosophers, and they've kind of died out today. But I want you to listen to this quote, because it gets into, in a sense, it gets really into the heart of what my whole talk about today is going to be about. Listen to this quote. If there is no God, nothing about me needs to be serious, argues the theologian. See, I'm not necessarily saying Horkheimer believes this. If there is no God, nothing about me needs to be serious, argues the theologian. The horrible deeds I do, the suffering that I permit to exist, live on after the moment in which they occur only in the conscious human memory and expire without it. Can one admit this and live a serious but godless life? This is the question of philosophy. Let me repeat this again. Let me repeat this because listen carefully. If there is no God, nothing about me needs to be serious, argues the theologian. The horrible deeds I do, the suffering that I permit to exist, live on after the moment in which they occur only in the conscious memory. Remember that. They occur only in the conscious memory and expire with it. Can one admit this and live a serious but godly life? This is the question of philosophy. Now, this is quite interesting. I find the fact that he says this is the question of philosophy quite profound, and I agree. You see, Horkheimer here, he's not dealing with the old question of morality, that of can one be good without God, or the question of can morality exist without God, or the question of why should one be good without God. Instead, Horkheimer deals with something much more foundational, much more basic. You know, it's that of ontology, that of the nature of being, of that is what real in of what is real in and of itself. Now, look at the point that he made. He's saying if there is no God, if there's no transcendent consciousness, no being who for better or for worse sees all things and knows all things and remembers all things, then all things that exist, exist only in the minds and consciousness of those who see them or remember them or know them. And then, one day, if there was no one to think about them, no one to remember them, no one to know them, how can they be said to have any existence? And that is a point I'm going to try to prove to you. And I also want to try to prove to you why it might be, as his quote said, the question of philosophy. Now, what am I talking about? Well, let me give you an example. Suppose that I am right now making up a fantasy story in my mind, okay? I've just made up a fantasy story in my mind, okay? The scenario is in my head, something that only I know. You listening don't know it. The guys behind the camera don't know it. My wife and my kids don't know it. No one knows it except me. And, of course, God, if there's a God who knows all these things. Now, let's assume for argument's sake that there is no God, no transcendent being like the Judeo-Christian God who knows all things, he knows all thoughts, he knows everything. You know, he has, you know, what's commonly termed omniscience. Let's say, for argument's sake, that this God does not exist. Now, if that's true, and there is no transcendent God, then the only place where this fantasy that I just had in my mind exists, where is the only place it exists? Where? Well, of course, in my mind, right? No one else knows about, no one else knows what it is, and there is no God or transcends it who knows it. Therefore, it exists again only in my head, here and here alone. Now, let's go on. Suppose I were to die without telling anyone about it. Suppose it has been said the secret died with me. Then what? Well, the secret is gone. It has no more existence, does it? Okay? Now, let's take this analogy a little further. Suppose I told my fantasy C to three other people. Okay, three other people know the fantasy that played out in my mind. No one else. And that's, again, if there is no omniscient God who would know it. Okay? So suppose only I and these three people who are privy to it tell no one else. And then one day, one by one, we all die. Okay, so me and the three other are the only ones who knew about the fantasy. No one else knows about the fantasy. So it existed only in minds that are no longer there. So it also no longer has any kind of existence because the fantasy existed only in our minds, and these minds are now all gone. Okay? Let's go further. Again, we're going on the assumption that there is no God, no omniscience, no transcendent being who knows all things and remembers all things. Okay? Now let's assume for a moment that I told everybody in the world about my fantasy. I told everyone what was going on in my head, and so the whole world knew it. Everyone knew it. Everyone, that is, except God, because, well, we're going on the assumption that there is no God. Okay? Now, let's say that, Al Gore is right, and our SUVs and so forth are so heating up the earth and the atmosphere that the earth becomes uninhabitable, and so everyone dies. That means everyone who knows my fantasy is gone. They're all dead. Now again, there is no God who knew it, so the fantasy which existed only in our minds is now gone as well. No one knows it, no one is aware of its existence, no one remembers it. I mean, it's gone. It has no existence, not even as a memory. You might as well have said it not existed at all, right? Now, think about this for a minute. No God, no omniscience, no transcendence, no conscious being aware of it or remembering it. So from that perspective, what is the difference between this fantasy that once existed in all these minds and a fantasy, let's say, that never existed, that no one ever thought of? Think about this carefully now. I know this stuff isn't easy. I've had to work through this. If all beings who knew the fantasy are gone, and there's no memory, no recollection, no thought of it exists, or it ever will exist again, what is the difference between that and a fantasy that never existed in anyone's mind to begin with? There reaches a point when all consciousness is gone that the difference between the real and the unreal vanishes. That is, of course, if there is no God, because only then could all consciousness be gone. If all consciousness in the universe is gone, then in what sense did any of these, could of these things have been said to exist? Think through this point. I know if it's difficult for you, I'm getting a headache trying to think through this. Now, let's continue. Let's pursue this thought a little more. I can hear someone say, you think I'm joking? I really am getting one, but that's another point. Okay, I can hear someone argue, and rightfully so, They can say that there's a world of difference between a fantasy that exists only in someone's mind and something external to that mind. Let's say this table right here that is before us right now. This is real, isn't it? It isn't mind-dependent the same way that fantasy is, unlike the fantasy that existed in my mind, or only in the minds of the ones I told it, or even in the minds of the whole world who heard about the fantasy. The existence of this chair is a total, this table is a total separate entity, a total separate thing, and it's not fair to compare this objective table with a fantasy that existed only in my mind. That's the argument, and okay, it's fair enough. And I want to look at that argument, though. And it's the one I would expect, and it's a valid argument, at least to a point. Now, don't miss that last line. It's a valid argument, at least to a point. And that point is where I want to take us. You know, a number of shows ago, I looked at the famous question, if a tree falls in a forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make noise? And I argue that it doesn't make noise. It might vibrate molecules of air, but vibrating molecules of air without a functioning ear or ears can no more produce noise than a bowl of sugar could be sweet without a functioning mouth with the proper nerves that can convert these hard crystals of cane juice into the sensation of sweetness. As I said before, you could stick your fingers in the bowl of sugar. You could stick your foot in the bowl of sugar. You could put your hair in it. You could put your foot in it, and it's not going to be sweet. You need a functioning mouth for sugar to be sweet, just as you need a functioning ear for vibrating molecules of air to be noise. Now, let's think about this for a moment. We talked about how the fantasy didn't exist if there were no minds to remember it or know it, right? I mean, if the earth blew up and all minds and all conscious beings were dead and there were no omniscient gods to know the fantasy, then it would be as if the fantasy never existed, okay? Now, let's compare that to the idea of a tree falling in a forest. As I did this on another show, suppose a tree falls in a forest and there are only deaf people in the world. You know, would it make noise? Not to the deaf folks, it wouldn't. How could it? Because deaf folks can't hear. Suppose on the whole planet there were only deaf people. Would it make noise? Well, not to the folks on the planet, because nobody on the planet can hear. If you can't hear, there can't be noise. Well, suppose in all the universe there were only deaf beings. Would it make noise? Again, how could it? How could it? Because there's no ears or there's nobody can hear it. And how could there be noise if there's no one could hear it? Now, let's take it one more step. Suppose not only in the universe there were no beings who could hear, suppose there was no omniscient God at all, no supreme being or deity. Could you say then in any way that the tree in the forest made noise? No, how could it? You know, without an ear, without a being of any kind who could translate those vibrating molecules of air into noise, then there was no noise, right? I mean, it doesn't exist. So in one sense, that noise is about as non-existent as the fantasy that existed in the heads of a group of people who once existed and now don't. Can you see? That is, of course, in both cases, as long as there is no God, no omniscient being who remembers the fantasy or who heard the noise. Now, it's not just with noise. What about light? What about sight? Okay? In a universe where there were no beings with sight or a God who could see things, how could there be light? There can't be. There could be photons, yes, photons galore, but photons without minds that can convert them into what do we perceive as light is not light. They're just photons. So if there were no seeing beings in the universe with sight and no omniscient God, how could there be light? There can't be. In a way, it's that way with all our senses, really. Does this table have a texture or a shape? Well, sure, it does to me, and it does to any and all sentient beings who have a sense of touch or sight. Okay? Sure. But suppose in all the universe there were no beings which had a sense of sight or touch. No beings had a sense of sight. No beings could feel. No beings could see the shape. And again, suppose there was no omniscient God who could see or perceive or ideally touch the table and see its shape. then what kind of texture does it have? What kind of shape does it have? It can't have a texture. It can't have a shape, because texture and shape are things that exist in beings who have the sense of touch or sight. And if no beings have a sense of touch or sight, then how could it have a shape or texture any more than how can sugar be sweet if there's nothing that can taste the sweetness? Now, let's try to work this through. If something doesn't have color, for if there's no color, if there's no light, there's no color. And if there are no eyes, then there's no light. If something doesn't have sound, because if there's no ears to hear, then there's no sound. And if something doesn't have texture or shape, because there's nothing to feel it or see it, then how can it have shape or texture? And if something doesn't have taste, because there's no mouth to taste it, then what do you have? It's the same with smell. If you don't have a nose that can detect, how can you have odors? I mean, if you try to envision an object that does not have color, that does not have texture, that does not have shape, that makes no sound and has no taste or smell, what kind of existence does it have? Again, think this through with me. I know it's not intuitive, but if something does not have shape, does not have color, does not have texture or taste or smell, what kind of existence does it have? A few centuries ago, a British clergyman and philosopher named George Berkeley promoted the same idea. Berkeley came up with a phrase, esse percepi, et percepi, Latin for to be is to be perceived. To be is to be perceived. Now think about that in the context of what we've been looking at. To be is to be perceived. What does that mean? Well, again, how could there be shape, color, texture, smell, sound, without the apparatus and so forth to perceive them? Berkeley argued that physical objects are really just collections of sensible qualities, of sensation. And because sensation exists only if they are perceived, the existence of objects consists in their being perceived, in their being sensed in someone else's mind. Remember that bowl of sugar. Again, it isn't sweet without a mouth to taste it. It's the same with all the senses. There can't be sense qualities, hardness, softness, taste, touch, unless there are minds that can perceive them. Now, is Berkeley saying that if someone walked out of this room and no one was here, the table in the room would cease to exist? If I walked out of the studio and the cameraman walked out and there was no camera on this table recording, would it stop existing? Is that what he's saying? If no one perceives the table, was it not real? Berkeley's question, I think, would be more in line like this. What does it mean to say that the table is in the room if no one is there to perceive it? What can that mean other than if someone were in the room, they would perceive it? To say that the table is here is to say that it's being perceived. Okay, let's suppose this. But again, let's suppose there is no God, no conscious entity at all in the universe. There are no humans, no sentient perceiving beings in all of the creation. Nothing exists that has the capacity in any way to perceive this table. The table then would have no color, because color is in the mind. It would have no smell, because smell is in the mind, in the nose. How could something smell without a nose to smell it? How could it have smell? No taste. You need a mouth or something to taste it. No texture, shape, or form either. How then could it be said to have an existence? Again, what kind of existence is that? Now, if you try to imagine, theoretically, the table existing out of all relationships to any kind of perception, Berkeley would argue that by the very act of trying to imagine it that way, you are still imagining yourself or someone else perceiving it. The whole idea of existence is so caught up in the idea of perception that you can't really conceive of existence apart from perception. Now, enough of this. Just keep in mind the idea that existence, the concept of existence, is linked with the concept of perception. Grant me that much. Now, let's go back to the idea stated in the beginning, that of what's more real. Remember the thing in the beginning, what's more real, Homer's mythic Odysseus or you? Well, are you real? What does it mean to say that you are real? How do you know you exist? Well, anyone who knows you, they know you through their senses, right? You are known to everyone who knows you only through their senses. They see you, they hear you, they touch you, they smell you, and the like. You exist for them, but only in their minds. They can know you and your existence in no other way. If 20 people know you, then you exist for those 20 people. If 20,000 people know you, then you exist for those 20,000 people. But for all these people, no matter how many they are, you, like this table, exist for them only in their minds. It's because they are sentient perceiving beings that you can exist for them. That the fact that they are sentient perceiving beings is the only reason that you can exist for them at all. Now, with this in mind, contrast yourself to Homer's mythic character Odysseus. For about 2,800 years, people have been reading Homer's Iliad and Odyssey. And so over the centuries, millions and millions of people have known about Odysseus. But how do they know about him? Well, they read about him, and so he enters their mind through the senses, the same exact way you do. So for these millions and millions of people over the centuries, how does he exist? Again, the same way you and I do for the pitiful few who know us. He existed for them in their minds. He entered their senses and became lodged in their minds, the same way we do. Conscious, sentient, perceiving creatures were needed for Odysseus to, quote, exist. If no mind had heard of him, if no mind had read of him, if no mind had any consciousness of him, how could he have been said to exist at all? The fact that he was fictitious really makes no difference. Whether he were real or not, were there no minds to conceive of the idea of him, no sentient beings to perceive of him through the written word, how could he be sent to exist? What about us? I mean, again, if we don't have color, if we don't have shape, if we don't have texture or smell or sound, in what sense can we be said to exist? But you could say, well, you're aware of yourself. You don't need others around to tell you that you exist, right? Well, you know, there are a few ways to answer that. The simplest being is that you're aware of yourself only because you have a mind. How do you even know that you exist? Again, it comes back to the mind. There has to be a mind. There has to be conscious thought, your own, for you to know that you exist. If you had no mind, what kind of existence would you have? But this actually leads to where I want to go. Homer's Odysseus has existed, and still continues to exist in the minds of millions and millions of people. And how many minds do you exist? Or in how many have you existed? Or how many other minds do I exist or have I existed in? Let's do one better. I mean, suppose some infant who lived at the Amazon jungle 500 years ago died with his parents in some kind of plague. The few people that knew them, the child, the four-year-old, were gone. They've been dead for hundreds of years. Anyone who has ever known anything about them has vanished. They are gone. Now, let's assume, too, that there is no God, no conscious, omniscient, eternal God who knows everything. Let's assume a godless universe. So there is no being conscious of that child. He exists in no one's consciousness the way that I am right now existing in either yours or other consciousness. Now, in contrast, there's Homer's Odysseus, this mythic character who never had flesh and bone, who was made up. But right now, Odysseus exists in millions and millions of minds, has existed in millions of minds, pretty much the same way I exist in other folks' mind. Because again, as far as any of us are concerned, existence is something that we know only through minds. You can't know existence of anyone or anything other than through your mind. Now, let's assume that there is no God, no conscious being who sees or knows all things. If that's true, then any existence anyone has is really existence in other minds or in your own mind. Again, to take Berkeley's idea, to try to envision something existing apart from any relation is to still imagine it as being perceived. Try to think of something that's not perceived. To think of some lone asteroid hurling through the darkest corner of space is to still think of it as being perceived. Now, if there is no God, no omniscient being who perceives all things and knows all things, then existence is only in the minds of those who are perceiving something. And since Homer's Odysseus has existed in millions of minds for thousands of years, and since that four-year-old kid in the Amazon who existed only in a few minds for a few years, and since existence can be understood only in the context of minds, who has more reality, the mythic Odysseus or that four-year-old child? Well, If there is no God, if perception is limited only to us, then Odysseus would have to be said be more real than that child. Or take yourself, you or me. If existence is only in the minds of those who perceive him or are perceiving them, because you can't think of existence apart from perception, then because Odysseus existed and exists in more minds than you or me, then this mythic character has to be more real than you or I. That is, unless there is a God who has perceived all things, knows all things, and remembers all things. Our existence then is eternally safeguarded there. Otherwise, it's limited only to the minds that can perceive it. And when those minds go, our existence goes with it. Hence, unless you're willing to accept that the fictitional character Odysseus is more real than you are, it seems the existence of an omniscient God is the only way out. Now, there's one other way to think of it. If there is no God, here's what I'm trying to say. Let's get it down into a nutshell. If there is no God, there is only subjectivity. The world is known only through subjective minds. Yours, mine, and all other subjective minds out there. There can be no objectivity. But that's a contradiction, because the statement that there is only subjectivity is an objective statement about all reality. We are saying that all reality is subjective, except that the statement, all reality is subjective, refutes that idea, because it's purporting to make an objective claim. The claim that all reality is subjective is an objective claim, and hence a paradox arises. That paradox, however, vanishes once you accept the idea of the God of the Bible, who alone has all objectivity. All the rest of us can be totally subjective. All the world can appear to us totally subjective. It doesn't matter. And that's because objectivity exists, and in the end, that objectivity is found with the God of the Bible. The existence of God solves the problem of objectivity.